Well, good morning. My name is Catherine Okar. I'm currently a Winston Health Policy Fellow working in DC at the Department of Health and Human Services. But prior to that, I was the research coordinator for this study, which took place in Cleveland, Ohio, and sought to look at the multiple roles of cancer caregivers, which are often under the support services radar, we believe. Dr. Mosavo was the academic PI, and Kimberly Sanders was the community-based PI. So there was two PIs, and we really tried to emphasize and have an academic community-based partnership. So I have no relationships to disclose. But just a brief outline of kind of what I'll talk about today. I'll obviously give you a bit of background and tell you a little bit about the literature that's out there in terms of caregivers, and obviously tell you a bit about our project. I'll detail a little bit about our methodology and our demographics in terms of where we're coming from in Cleveland, and the population that we're dealing with. And then obviously I'll talk a bit about our results and describe a bit about the diverse roles that caregivers often play, and often how many there are, and the resource gaps that we found in this study when we were looking at caregivers. And then tell you a little bit about the implications for policy development, program development at the local, the state, and the national level. So just a bit of background, we know that caregivers are often an essential part of the survivor's experience and journey through cancer. So really we wanted to highlight them through this talk, but they often experience what's known as caregiver burden, which is the psychological distress from an imbalance of what the caregiver demands are with what available resources and support services there are. So their quality of life is inevitably impacted. So the burden can range from not only mental and emotional hardship, but also physical burdens and psychosocial burdens and spiritual burdens. So obviously they have a lot of stressors and hardships to deal with. We also know, though, that there are positive elements to caregiving. This is not all bad. I mean, this is a huge effort that is taking place, and often caregivers have reported in the literature that they feel a strong sense and loyalty and altruism to the person they're caring for. They often develop a closer bond. They have a stronger sense of self-worth and also develop a sense of strength amidst adversity. So there's definitely a balance taking place, and there are some good aspects of this. But there's definitely a lack of literature in terms of what the needs of caregivers are. Obviously, there's a lot about what the survivors need, and that is good, and we are obviously advocating for that, but caregivers are often overlooked, and they have needs as well, and they often neglect their own needs to care for their loved one. And so we're really looking and highlighting through this talk what are the needs of caregivers, especially in low-income communities. So we sought to do a community-based participatory research study where we really integrated the cancer survivors and caregivers into our study, and I'll tell you a little bit about our approach in a bit. But our goal was, again, to uncover the needs, especially of low-income African-American cancer survivors and caregivers. This was based in Cleveland, Ohio, and we saw that there was a significant lack of services within the inner city and low-income areas of Cleveland. There's definitely some support services and resource centers on the outskirts and in the suburbs, but within Cleveland proper, there is a definite lack of services within the community. So we decided to take a four-pronged approach and did interviews with cancer caregivers, and we actually trained caregivers and survivors to do those interviews. And we also did a photo voice project. For those of you unfamiliar with photo voice, it's basically giving participants cameras and having them tell their story and their wants and their needs through pictures. So that is quite a dynamic aspect of this project. And then we also did town hall meetings within the community with in several communities in Cleveland. And then we also had advisory committees, one of which, there was three advisory committees. One was cancer survivors, one was cancer health professionals, and the last one was cancer caregivers. So through that, we had quite an array and a breadth of participants, but we really focused on three low-income areas within Cleveland with an average household income of about $16,000. the average age range of the participants was quite wide. We had caregivers who were in their early 20s, and then we had some who were in their late 50s. So we really saw a diverse spectrum of needs. Some of those who were the caregivers had a high school degree, most of them did, and some had college. And then just to kind of give you a bit of context, the survivors and the patients, most of them were on Medicaid. So we really were dealing with a low-income population. And I should talk a little bit about the recruitment before I keep going. But our recruitment was really through the snowball method and through our advisory committees. So we had caregivers and professionals and survivors on our committees. And so through that, we kind of snowballed and had kind of had a network build from that. And that's how we drew in more caregivers. We also used our community partner, which was invaluable. NEON is basically a number of health centers within low-income areas of Cleveland. And so that was an invaluable resource for our work as well. So amidst our study and utilizing this four-pronged approach, we found that caregivers often would say, you know, after learning the diagnosis, it was like a whole new world. The number of roles that some of the caregivers took on was astounding. And you can see from this list that they take on a lot and a lot of different ones. Confidant, caretaker. We saw that not only are the caregivers taking care of their own children, but they often take care of the survivor's children as well. They're handling things like household chores, just general monitoring of the cancer patient or survivor. They're often doing their makeup and hairstyling. So a lot of our caregivers would say that they would help their loved one pick out a wig or do their makeup. So even tiny things like that we saw were very, very important. In terms of being a nutrition expert, we saw that caregivers were really having to educate themselves about how to lead a healthier lifestyle, what food to give their loved one. So they were not only shopping for groceries, but they were preparing the meals. They were learning what was good and what was good not to eat. On the flip side, they were also serving as patient advocates, not only helping their loved one navigate the healthcare system, going with them to doctor's appointments, asking questions, because often the cancer survivor is so overwhelmed, they don't know or they just can't even think of what questions to ask. And I think we can all empathize with that. When you get any diagnosis in the doctor's room, you don't know what questions to ask, so it helps to have somebody there with you. But also, the caregivers are handling personal finances, medical bills, and seeing what the survivor can and can't afford. They're also doing in-home care, so you know, depending on the illness trajectory, feeding, bathing, activities of daily living, medication dispenser. So really, these caregivers are learning a lot and knowing a lot about what medications to take, when to take them, how much they cost. Obviously, they are serving as a driver or helping with transportation, educating the survivor about what they can and cannot do, and undoubtedly serving as moral support, a counselor, somebody to encourage the survivor, you know, to along this journey. And sometimes they even serve as a decision maker. So you can see with the breadth of roles that they have, this is a lot of pressure and a lot of stress. And so it makes sense that they have needs of their own that are often overlooked because they have so many other things to worry about, and often quite selfishly. So we found that the caregivers, in terms of resource gaps, that there's a significant lack of information. Upon diagnosis or upon hearing about what the cancer diagnosis or upon hearing how the cancer survivor is doing, they're ill-prepared for not only the mental hardship but for the physical hardship. And, you know, they have to balance taking off work, taking care of their children, educating themselves, and dealing with an emotional and spiritual burden that this can be. And we also heard from a number of survivors from a number of caregivers that would say, I felt guilty because sometimes I was so exhausted and needed a break, but I felt guilty because, you know, there's this unspoken belief that I should be the strong one and kind of stay the course and you know, help my loved one get through it. And so they didn't know how to kind of balance their own needs with the needs of their loved ones. So that was something that we found was significant to our caregivers. In terms of access to resources, it certainly relates to lack of information. Location of resources is key. Like I mentioned before, the resource centers, you know, there's certainly some available in Cleveland that offer free services, but transportation was certainly an issue out to getting to those services, but also cultural context was an issue. You know, a lot of the African American population maybe didn't want to go into a population that was completely culturally, ethnically, socioeconomically different than them, even if the services were free. And obviously, a number of our caregivers mentioned that they could have used some help with activities of daily living. You know, little did they realize that they would be feeding and bathing and clothing some of their loved ones. So a number of them had mentioned that not only would they love to have had help with the daily tasks, but also support in terms of kind of seeing that camaraderie and learning from other caregivers who have been through it. And that was certainly a theme, that they wish they could have seen what other people had done and gone through. And so that would have been immensely helpful. In terms of one of the questions we asked to both our caregivers and our survivors was, if you could envision a perfect resource center, what would you envision? And across the board, theme was location. You know, they wanted kind of an oasis in their own community that they could go to and take a break or learn or be with others in their own situation. It wasn't, you know, it didn't matter if it was, you know, chandeliers, and if it wasn't in their community, it was almost irrelevant. And in terms of a peaceful setting, some people said, you know, it would be lovely to have some nature or, you know, something that is calming, you know, right in our inner city neighborhood. Certainly childcare, and you can kind of see the breadth of different resources that people would love to have. Like I mentioned before, the support groups and having that camaraderie of other people who have been through it before. Some even mentioned, you know, not only do I need medical information, but I need ways to, how do I relieve stress? You know, not only for me, but also for the survivor. Certainly spirituality is a something that people had looked to often and would find useful in a resource center. And learning kind of how to take better care of themselves. You know, I think that's where the exercise machines in the pool comes from. Not only is it relaxing, but they want to have a better lifestyle and a healthier lifestyle, and they don't know how to do that. And certainly sensitive and unbiased staff came up a number of times in terms of, Will there be staff who are not judging me for, you know, how much I can or can't pay or what socioeconomic status I am or what culture or ethnicity I'm from? And obviously, given that this is a low-income population, financial assistance was often mentioned that, you know, often caregivers will take on a financial burden or understand what the survivor's financial burden will be. So in terms of implications, we found several. And for program development, especially at the local level, we felt that contextual approach is key. In other words, you know, the hot word of cultural competence and having, you know, programs that are culturally, ethnically, socioeconomically competent and are so much so that they understand where people are coming from. And that, of course, includes existence and location of programs and resource centers. I know I keep reiterating it, but it's so important because having something that you can relate to and that's in your own community is central. In terms of caregivers, again, we would especially like to have an enhanced awareness and greater funding so that these important people are not constantly overlooked. They have such a huge task, not only to care for their own needs, but to care for the survivors' needs. And so that's certainly something that not only within academia, within the private sector, and at the local, state, and national levels, we've thought that is hugely important so that this group of people is no longer overlooked. And finally, just overall, stronger policies that not only look to survivors, because we think that is obviously so important, but also look to caregivers and acknowledge that they have unique and diverse needs as well, because often they're neglecting themselves and they are, you know, there's a tremendous burnout and they need respite care as well. And so that's something that we want to make sure that we spotlight and that we don't overlook so that they can continue doing the great work that they do. And with that, I will take questions, but I did want to acknowledge, obviously, our participants and their families. Our participants worked super hard to understand. I'm sure as many of you are researchers, it's not easy to understand the ins and outs of interviewing, and we had a lot of people who had never done it, and we were able to train them to do this and contribute significantly to our research. And obviously, the Center for Reducing Health Disparities and the Comprehensive Cancer Center, and obviously our Cleveland residents and community leaders and our funder, Lance Armstrong Foundation, and NEON, which was our community partner.